Ladies and gentlemen, we present a radio program in English.
I feel that I am speaking to friends and companions.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
And now, on London Taxi Radio, it's the Mick the Brit broadcast with Mick the Brit, broadcasting from a secret location south of the river. And here's your host,
Mick the Brit.
Oh, thank you so much.
Ah, there you are. Thank you very much for seeking us out, downloading and listening to us. It's the Mick the Brit podcast. It's a mixture of, kind of taxi-related stuff. For the non-taxi driver listener there, yes, I'm a taxi driver in London and have been for the last 30 years or so. And I also like radio. And talking of radio, over the last, I think, four weeks, a new radio station started up in Greenwich, London. It's called Maritime Radio. It's a community station for the people of Greenwich. And you can hear them on 96.5 FM as you drive into work towards the Blackwall Tunnel or on your way home. But anyway, they're south of the river, Greenwich, based in Shooters Hill, and they've just kind of got started. And it's for the community of Greenwich. So I've been listening to it. In fact, I know one of the jocks on there. He's on Solar Radio, which is where I met him, Clive R. He's on between 10 and midnight on Thursdays. But there's another chap who I quite like. His name's Dennis Roberts, and he's on between 10 and 12 on a Wednesday night. And here is some of Dennis's links on his show.
It's a song that's been recorded by a string of big names, and possibly the most successful version came from Ketty Lester, but none of them sounded anything like that. That was the great voice of Scotland's own Frankie Miller, and if you're very good, I might play some more by him in future weeks. But right now, it's time for our Under the Covers feature, where I bring you a trio of songs of one artist heard again through the covers by others. And this week, our spotlight falls on singer-songwriter and musician Paul Carrack. Now, one of his successful songs turns up here with an inventive treatment by Sharon. Take a listen. The lady of the house has a soft spot for that song, and it was given a very fine out in there by 60s group The Fortunes, who are still going strong and often pop up on those 60s package tours that get into the local theatres. Now, I know I'm not alone in thinking that Paul Carrack's song How Long is a modern classic, and the original by Ace has become a natural for any of those soft soul collections. But I love this next version. It comes from Bobby Womack, where he turns the song into a little floor filler, and I hope you're ready for this.
So there's Dennis Roberts. You can hear him on Maritime Radio between 10 and 12 on a Wednesday night. I don't know about you, but he kind of reminds me of Barry of Watford. If Barry of Watford Check out Barry at Watford, of course. He sometimes pitches up on Steve Wright in the afternoon. But if you listen to... that's kind of who he reminds me of. Barry of Watford, if Barry of Watford was to be a DJ. Let's have some more of Barry.
Another of the new releases that caught my attention here, that was the Kelly Bell Band, and I very much hope that their rhythms got through to your feet and possibly beyond. And somewhere out there in Plumstead is Mike Banks, who got in touch with some memories of going to Woolwich in the 60s to see a whole bunch of big names on stage at the Shakespeare Pub in Power Street. Well, the building's still there, but it's no longer a pub. But hopefully this next choice will bring back a few of those memories for Mike, because this is Suit Money and his Big Roll Band.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Yeah. Did you vote for Nigel and the Brexit Party? Because the party are now making plans for Nigel. As Europe votes, as we speak, and who knows, we've got a general election coming up here in the UK.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
XTC making plans for Nigel. Yes, the Brexit Party are very busy at the moment making plans for Nigel. All right, a couple of weeks ago, I didn't get the chance to talk about this, but a couple of weeks ago, down at the shelter, that's it, Russell Square Shelter, in Russell Square. It was very busy down there. We had a celebrity visiting and also a freelance German journalist from Hamburg. A nice girl by the name of Dora. And she took an interest in the shelter and wanted to write a freelance article about the shelter and some of the inhabitants. Well, at the time I happened to be one of the inhabitants. And after establishing what she was doing and why she was there, she told us she was from Hamburg. At which point, of course, I said, oh, Kevin Keegan played for you. And he won the European Player of the Year. But being younger than ourselves, that meant didn't mean much. So she's going to keep in touch and let us know where her article appears. And who knows... the shelter will spread far and wide. The news of the shelter and some of its characters will spread far and wide. Now, the celebrity that we had there was Tony Robinson. And just as a quick reminder, Tony Robinson played Baldrick in Blackadder, but I'm sure he doesn't like to be kept being reminded of that, because he quite often pitches up on the History Channel. Well, he's digging about, looking for artifacts. In fact, the day before, the night before I saw him there at Russell Square Shelter, I was watching a documentary, and he's in Egypt, down some tomb. So when he came out, I said, what was worse, being in that shelter there, doing your documentary, or being in Egypt, stuck down a tomb? And he said, He didn't really answer that one. And as he was leaving, I said, was it at university that you got your interest in history? He said, university? I didn't go to university. I left school at 16. Who would have thought? Because all that crowd out of Blackadder, pretty much they all went to university. So I think the man done good.
The Brit Podcast.
All right. We're still keeping it light here for the moment. We will get into some more trade-based stuff a little later on. But we haven't done this for a while, and that is number ones 20, 30 and 40 years ago this week. So what do you think the number one song was this week 20 years ago? It was this. Yeah, that was Boyzone and You Needed Me. Number one this week, 20 years ago. Number one, 30 years ago, was this. Hillsborough and Ferry Cross the Mersey, which was a charity song for the victims of Hillsborough 30 years ago. And number one, 40 years ago, was this. I can only assume 20, 30 and 40 years ago this week, people were kind of in a melancholy mood. It is Art Garfunkel. And Bright Eyes, number one, 40 years ago this week.
Is it a kind of dream? Floating out on the tide, following the river of death downstream. Oh, is it?
Mick the Brit Podcast.
Here's a beautiful song that I'd like to dedicate to a beautiful lady. Myrna Bourne's a rabbit. Woo-hoo. She has an unusual habit. Woo-hoo. You tickle her nose, she wiggles her toes. Myrna Bourne's a rabbit. Woo-hoo. Myrna has lovely hair, two beautiful eyes set in a pair. You tickle her nose, she wiggles her toes. Myrna Bourne's a rabbit.
I'm probably now the most hated woman in the cap trade.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Thank you very much to Jim. Very talented is our Jim. In fact, when he was a lot younger, he appeared at the Palladium in Oliver. Yeah, I think he was playing Fagin. Right, we have some more from Jim now with his report of his experience liaising with the police officers at the beginning of Wednesday's demo in Parliament Square. Or should I say protest? It was a silent protest signifying where buses go, taxis go. Over to you, Jim.
Just like to say thank you for everyone who turned up today. It was wonderful the way you all stuck together. I'll explain what happened. I got there early and I had a word with a fella on the bridge to let cabs join the demo. He was letting them come north over the bridge, but obviously if you was coming along the embankment, there was no turning right. You had to turn left and do a U-turn on the bridge. I walked down to Horse Guards Avenue and I spoke with the policeman there. It was his first demo, so he didn't really know what he was doing, and he was told just to block it off. I had a word with him. He contacted his control room, and they told him to let cabs in. And he started letting cabs in, but unfortunately, for some unknown reason, he took a turn for the worse, and when I walked away, he blocked it off again. But I had a word with his inspector, and he had to open it up again. Then we had the confusion in Whitehall, where a stroppy police officer wasn't letting anyone go down Whitehall, no cabs going down Whitehall to join the demo until 1 o'clock. He was adamant that there was people working down there, he said, putting out the cones. And I said, I'm looking down there, I can't see anyone working. He said, It's not your decision, it's my decision, no one's going through. So then we got the cabs to block Horse Guards Avenue and the other side of Whitehall and just sit there. It was only 10 minutes ago, so they sat there for 10 minutes and they blocked the road. We got other traffic in the road to do U-turns or turn left onto the embankment. But they started letting traffic go down the inside lane again. Now, I complained about this vigorously, and a police sergeant approached me on a bike and he said, we're letting traffic go down the inside. So I said, no, you're not to let them go down the inside. Can you contact your inspector and get him to get through to the control room and find out what he's supposed to be doing? Because that was the reason why we was only doing one day a week, is that they would block that road off completely except for emergency vehicles. That was the trade-off that we had, the agreement we had. Anyway, after a bit of to-ing and fro-ing, he said to me, what we're going to do, we're going to temporarily block it off, and we want you to go and talk to the inspector in Parliament Square. So I thought, oh, I'm in trouble now. So I got a lift down from there down to Parliament Square, and I saw his inspector, a big geezer with two pips on his shoulders. And as I approached him, he went, before we say anything, sir, I would like to apologise for what's gone on today. It's a mistake on our behalf. It won't happen again. Please don't take the demonstration elsewhere. You're quite welcome to, and we're quite welcome to police it very casually, as we have done in the past. No traffic will be allowed down the inside, only emergency vehicles. So that was nice. That's the first time we've ever had an apology on the street from the police. But it was good. It was good to hear. Anyway, thank you all for turning up, and see you all again next Wednesday.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
And on Wednesday, Jim had an experience. Tell us a bit more about your experience, Jim.
Well, I managed to tick another thing off my bucket list today. When I was leaving the protest in Parliament Square, I had to go down the subway to get to Westminster Station because I came on the tube. And while I was walking along there was a fella down there busking, a Rastafarian, and he was singing No Woman, No Cry. And as I was approaching him, I looked at him, and I don't know what made me do it. I just started singing along with him, like, because there was no one in the tunnel. It was only him and me. And as I went to walk past, he grabbed me and he pulled me back. He went, no, no, no. He says, you're not going. He said, we're going to start again. We're going to sing together. So I was in there, and I sung No Woman, No Cry with this Rastafarian playing a guitar. And I couldn't believe it. The acoustics down them subways are absolutely brilliant. But there was no one down there to film it for the karaoke channel, or there was no one down there really to listen to it. Only there was two people to walk past with, and they gave us like funny looks as they walked past, as if to say, who's that nah? But it's something I've wanted to do for ages. I've always wanted to busk in the subways, because When I was about 17, I used to busk. I bought a guitar and learned to play it, and I used to go outside the theatres in the West End, and I used to sing. Me and a fella called Philip Baldwin, we used to do quite well, but you know, this is something I've wanted to do for a long time, and I've waited so many years to do it. And coming home from the protest, I happened to do it, so I was over the moon when I come home.
Here's Jim and the busker down the subway singing No Woman, No Cry. I think you could have done with a few Wailers there, Bob. Yeah. Jim. You've got me calling you Bob, Jim. So far, so good. Come on, Jim. Oh, very good. It's uncanny, isn't it? It's almost as if Bob's in the subway there with you. Jim, that's Jim and Busker with a little bit of help from Bob Marley and the Wailers. All right, on to our next bit now. Very talented is our Jim. Thank you very much, Jim, for your contributions there, and we'll be hearing a bit more from you as well with, well, some of your opinions in VOC. Yes, we've got one of those coming up, but something a little bit more important, because I think it's quite relevant. We spoke about it last week with Gunty, and I mentioned a man by the name of Tucker Carlson. Now, Tucker Carlson does a show on Fox TV in the US, which some might say is a sort of a conservative type news channel. Their biases are much more obvious in the States with their media, unlike here, where it's, although they're biased, it's a bit more overt, a bit more undercover. They try to cover it up, but it just seeps through. And you might experience that when you hear these political commentators, even the news readers. Blimey, that bloke who does News at 10 on ITV, the way he presents the news. It's not news, mate. We don't want your opinions, your smug little remarks. Just get on and tell us what happened today. Anyway, back to Tucker Carlson. So I mentioned Tucker Carlson because he got dug out for something he did on Twitter. Not what he did on Twitter, but he actually did a radio show, an interview, like 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And someone decided to dig this up and put it all over Twitter. And, well, I'll let Tucker tell you the rest.
One day you're having dinner with your family, imagining everything is fine. The next, your phone is exploding with calls from reporters. They read you snippets from a press release written by Democratic Party operatives. They demand to know how you could possibly have said something so awful and offensive. Do you have a statement on how immoral you are? It's a bewildering moment, especially when the quotes in question are more than a decade old. There's really not that much you can do to respond. It's pointless to try to explain how the words were spoken in jest or taken out of...
Does this remind you of anyone? I'm thinking Danny Baker.
...context, or in any case bear no resemblance to what you actually think or would want for the country. None of that matters. Nobody cares. You know the role you're required to play. You are a sinner begging the forgiveness of Twitter. So you issue a statement of deep contrition. You apologize profusely for your transgressions. You promise to be a better person going forward. With the guidance of your contrition consultants, you send money to whatever organization claims to represent the people you supposedly offended. Then you sit back and brace for a wave of stories about your apology, all of which are simply pretexts for attacking you again. In the end, you get fired. You lose your job. Nobody defends you. Your neighbors avert their gaze as you pull into the driveway. You are ruined. And yet, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how despised and humiliated you may be, there is one thing you can never do, one thing that is absolutely not allowed. You can never acknowledge the comic absurdity of the whole thing. You can never laugh in the face of the mob. You must always pretend that the people yelling at you are somehow your moral superiors. You have to assume that what they say they're mad about is what they're actually mad about. You have to take them at face value. You must pretend this is a debate about virtue and not about power, that your critics are arguing from principle and not from partisanship. No matter what they take from you in the end, you must continue to pretend that these things are true. You are bad. They are good. The system is on the level. But what if we stopped pretending for a minute? What if we acknowledged what's actually going on? One side is deadly serious. They believe that politics is war. They're not interested in abstractions or principles, rules or traditions.
Now, does this sound familiar? Think Conservative, think Labour, think Lib Dems, because this kind of happens over here as well.
They seek power, and they plan to win it, whatever it takes. If that includes getting you fired or silencing you or threatening your family at home or throwing you in prison, okay. They know what their goal is. If you're in the way, they will crush you. What's interesting is how reliably the other side pretends that none of this is happening. Republicans in Washington do a fairly credible imitation of an opposition party. They still give speeches. They tweet quite a bit. They make concerned noises about how liberals are bad. But on the deepest level, it's all a pose. In their minds, where it matters, Republican leaders are controlled by the left. They know exactly what they're allowed to say and believe. They know what the rules are. They may understand that those rules are written by the very people who seek their destruction. They ruthlessly enforce them anyway. How many times have you seen it happen? Some conservative figure will say something stupid or incomplete or too far outside the bounds of received wisdom for the moral guardian. Twitter goes bonkers. The mob demands a response. Very often, the first people calling for the destruction of that person are Republican leaders. A couple of years ago, the entire Democratic Party decided to deny the biological reality of sex differences, an idea that's as insane as it is dangerous. Republican leaders decided not to criticize them for it. They might get upset. This is a system built on deceit and enforced silence. Hypocrisy is its hallmark. Yet in Washington, it's considered rude to ask questions about how exactly it works. Why are the people who considered Bill Clinton a hero lecturing me about sexism? How can the party that demands racial quotas denounce other people as racist? After a while, you begin to think that maybe their criticisms aren't sincere. Maybe their moral puffery is a costume. Maybe the whole conversation is an absurd joke. Maybe we're falling for it. You sometimes hear modern progressives described as new Puritans. That's a slur on colonial Americans. Whatever their flaws, the Puritans cared about the fate of the human soul and the moral regeneration of their society. Those are not topics that interest progressives. They're too busy pushing late-term abortion and cross-dressing on fifth graders. These are the people who write our movies and our sitcoms. They are not shocked by naughty words. They just pretend to be when it's useful. It's been very useful lately. The left's main goal, in case you haven't noticed, is controlling what you think. In order to do that, they have to control the information that you receive. Google and Facebook and Twitter are fully on board with that. They're happy to ban unapproved thoughts, and they don't apologize for it. They often do. So do the other cable channels and virtually every major news outlet in this country. One of the only places left in the United States where independent thoughts are allowed is right here. the opinion hours on this network. Just a few hours in a sea of television programming. It's not much, relatively speaking. For the left, it's unacceptable. They demand total conformity. Since the day we went on the air, they've been working hard to kill this show. We haven't said much about it in public. It seemed too self-referential. The point of this show has never been us. But now it's obvious to everybody. There's no pretending that it's not happening. It is happening. And so going forward, we'll be covering their efforts to make us be quiet. For now, though, just two points to leave you with. First, Fox News is behind us, as they have been since the very first day. Toughness is a rare quality at a TV network, and we are grateful for that. Second, we've always apologized when we're wrong, and we'll continue to do that. That's what decent people do. They apologize. But we will never bow to the mob. Ever. No matter what.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Does any of that sound familiar for this country, for the UK? Yeah, it's true, isn't it? I mean, now they're trying to control what you drive, what you eat, where you go. It's all about obedience, conformity. And they will do and use anything they know and think they can get away with in order to do that. And we, as taxi drivers, as somebody said, we are the last of the mavericks. Because that's the one thing the establishment don't like, mavericks. Free, independent spirits. And it's not just the establishment either. Our brainwashed youth now, because they're the ones jumping up and down. Anyway, I'm going on a bit of a rant here. Right, okay, well, let's get back to LTR VOC, London Taxi Radio, Voice of the Cabbie. And this was a platform set up so that cab drivers' voices could be heard. And we would put it out on londontaxiradio.co.uk. Well, unless I get a request from somebody to feature it in their broadcast, this is the place where you hear it. So, here is the latest Voice of the Cab Driver.
Right, if you ever want to waste an hour and 25 minutes of your life, try and book your plating appointment with TfL. I hung on for 64 minutes, finally got an answer. Tried to book, and I was calculated this right out, tried to book a plating appointment for the 21st of June, so the 28-day window, no problem. Can't have that because the computer is only allowing us to get into the 20th at the moment. But you can ring back next week and then change it to the 21st if there's one available. So that's what I did and paid up and moaned and groaned. And then I said to him, I said, what's the reason behind this ridiculous delays? And he said, well, it's the driver's fault. I said, what are you talking about the driver's fault? I said, there are less taxi drivers than there were a year ago. So you can't tell me you're getting more calls for plating appointments. Yeah, well, it's to do with the ULEZ. And yeah, well, it's to do with the private hire. A lot of people are buying new vehicles. And he was struggling to come up with an excuse. But he's just a poor Joe, like this end of the argument. We're just a poor saps at either end of it. Meanwhile, up at TfL, earning 100 grand plus, are people you can't speak to or moan to. You can't even, there's no longer a taxi complaints line now. You have to email in. So, as ever, these people are getting away with murder. And it's disgraceful. Public servants, they'll be put on the dole.
Again, it's only the drivers who are complaining about the hold-ups for plating cabs and getting your re-licence and your bill. After 45 years of driving a cab, a 15th bill renewal should have gone through like clockwork. I renewed my driving licence in 4 days. I renewed it in about 10 minutes online, and then I got it in 4 days, whereas it took me 4 months, 2 weeks to renew my bill. And, you know, now they're having trouble booking in cabs for plating. This is ridiculous. But, again, it's only the drivers that are moaning. Where are the orgs in all this? Our largest org taking £18 a week from 10,000 drivers. Where is the other biggest one, the UCG, with thousands of drivers? Where's the unions, the RMT and Unite, with all their millions of members all over the country? Where's the smallest org, the LCDC? No one is representing us properly. Why? We're paying their way. We're paying them money. They get money off of us to represent us, and they're not representing us. Why has it always got to be the driver that's screaming? It's just not right. We should all, as a trade, forget about our orgs. Just stop the direct debit. Stop every penny. Don't give them nothing until they do something. And they're not doing anything for us. When was the last time the orgs turned round, a big headlines in their paper, complete victory for the trade? I haven't seen that I've never seen it, to be honest. So it's up to the drivers. Don't pay any more subs. Don't give them anything. And also, what we don't need is, it's not in the rule book.
I can't gainsay much of what you said there. Yeah. And I think they've hit a brick wall. But they need to come together and decide how to knock this brick wall down. You just get the brush off. People met with Ardy Alexander the other day. They said it was like, you know, she's just not interested. All she talked about was walking and cycling. She didn't talk about people's jobs and their livelihoods, not just the drivers, but the people who run garages and the people who fix cabs and the people who put meters in them and all that. You know, this is probably 30 or 40,000 people's livelihoods at risk. And it was as if, like, oh, well, you know... I want more daffodils on the roadside. You know, these middle class, self-entitled fantasists. That's what they're fantasists. They're living in a world that doesn't exist and can't be created. Okay? They've got nostalgia for something that never existed. It is ridiculous. But I don't know what to do. There are people on the left of politics, the right of politics, and in the middle, we're just not on their radar. They don't give a shit about us. You know, I said the other day to the cycling lobby, I said, do you want to reduce pollution? I said, how about having a Buy British policy for cycles so that they don't have to be brought from China on ships spewing out shit because there's no emission standards for cargo ships? How about doing that as a first step, saying you can't join the London cycling campaign or stop killing cyclists until you've got a British-made bike? Didn't even get an answer. They can't face their own truths. But we've certainly got to do something about TfL. When they said it was woefully inadequate, that was the biggest understatement of all time. It's just fucking useless.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Thank you very much to the contributors of LTR VOC. And also thank you very much for sticking with us this far. And don't forget, keep going back to londontaxiradio.co.uk. You'll find all the latest podcasts there when we put them up there. Well, no, we do put them up there. It's just that, it's very hard to be consistent in this game. So we will do our best for that. And, of course, you can listen to the music, the perfect antidote to political talk, anywhere else on the radio. londontaxiradio.co.uk. And, of course, you can... Yes, you can follow Mick the Brit at Mick the Brit on Twitter. So once again, thank you very much for listening to the Mick the Brit podcast. Might speak to you next week, if not the week after. Hopefully, all the best to you. Good luck. Have a good one. Ta-ra.
Good night and good luck to you all.